Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
The 468th edition of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting research platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit hofbets.com and use promo code SGPN to get 50% off your first month and start making smarter bets today. We're also brought to you by the SGPN app. The SGPN app is completely free to download and home for all your favorite SGPN podcasts, contests, and picks. Just type SGPN into your app store today to download America's number one DGEN app.
Howdy, howdy, ho, degenerinos, and welcome to episode 468 of the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Going out to Bria Roge, looks like the name is, on YouTube, who said a lot of crazy things about me, but good crazy things about me, which is unusual. Usually I'm told I look like a Russian Roy Nelson or a Russian Johnny Hendricks, or and Gumby looks like Jeremy Stevens. I think he was.
I look like I could be related to Jeremy Stevens. I don't look like Jeremy Stevens. I could be related to him.
So you look like a dickhead then. is what he's saying, basically.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. Thank you, Bria Roge, for not just slobbering all over Gumby, but slobbering all over me as well. Thank you for coming to the show. It's a UFC episode, the very last one of the year. Last one for like a month. Gumby and I were just talking off air about what we're going to do. We do have some good things planned. There are actually good events going on while the UFC goes dark. They're dark for, when's the next one? Yeah, almost a month. Exactly. January 13th is the next event, but we will not leave your ear holes nor your eye holes, during that time. So let's get cracking. Yeah. I was told I'm not allowed to jerk around in this one because we have 9 fights to cover, and the boss Gumby says we have to get to him. So let's bring him in and we'll get to it. 9 fights.
I was wondering if you were even going to introduce me. It sounded like you were going
to really go.
It sounded like you were going to break right into the fight maybe. Card.
I was going to ask you, should I still introduce you? Do you enjoy having a big introduction?
I mean, like, we got to start the show somehow. I mean, like, okay. I guess we could experiment with it, but I don't know that we need to fix what's not broken at 468 right. episodes. Yeah, I'm good.
People on YouTube are like, he's sitting right there. You don't have to introduce him. He's right there. But not most people listen to us still rather than watch us. All right, we got a big card, Gumby, so we got to get cracking on it. Thoughts on the prelims before we do get cracking on it?
One of the best cards of the year, and prelims included. I mean, we got rank fighters on the prelims right now, guys who could be ranked, gals who could be ranked. I mean, we got a potential title challenger. I mean, a guy who did challenge for the title on the prelims. I mean, they're great. Yep. This whole card's great.
There you go. Great. It's going to be a great episode. That means as well. Very chalky card for me, except very strangely, 3 fights in a row. I didn't go chalk. I like dogs in 3 fights in a row. So.
Well, strange. You probably spoiled that. Now once you start talking, now once you start taking dogs, I'm going to know the next 3 are dogs.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to tail me anyway. What happened last week when you tailed along with me, Gumby?
Yeah, I know. And what happened the week before when I told you exactly, you were an idiot on every pick, and I was right.
Yes, so. Exactly. I do reserve the right to flip flop on picks, so you may persuade me on something after we break down the fight. So we shall see. How is it for you? Just a normal card in terms of dogs, favorites, that type of stuff?
I think normal by my percentage, my like usual percentages, okay. Like probably if you add up all the dogs I took over the course of the year versus all the favorites, I mean, I think this is probably right around what I would usually take. It's a bigger card, so there's like an extra dog or two.
Right. Statistically, we should probably get what we're at 68% this year. So that would be about what, four or five dogs on a card of this size. So Gumby probably has about 11 dogs here, but we'll see. Let's get a Krakalak in UFC 296. We're almost at the mythical UFC 300. How many fights are going to be on UFC 300? Because every single fighter interviewed says, oh, I'm aiming for the UFC 300 card. There's going to be a lot of disappointed fighters.
Yeah, there's going to be. It's same thing every time they go to Canada, right? Like any fighter whoever's been to Canada, you know, like it's like, I really want on that Canadian card. And it's like, yeah. I'm sure you do, bud. UFC New York is another big one, right? Like anybody from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, they're like, oh yeah, I'd really like on the MSG show. And I'm like, I bet you would, dude. But like also like enjoy the Apex.
All right. Actually, before I do that, tell us about your hat. It's a boring hat for your standards today. What is your hat?
It is a little bit of a boring hat by my standards in terms of like logo. But this this was sent to me all the way from Belgium. A friend of mine from Twitter, Chris Ganach, who is for a little while owned a Belgian fight promotion. This was the logo for 360 promotions. Which later got absorbed as one of the like academy shows for Cage Warriors. So he wound up like selling out to Cage Warriors as the like Belgium academy. So this is a short-lived Belgian promotion.
Gumby has friends all over the globe. I said boring because we're used to seeing like, like a luchador raccoon eating a chalupa, riding a donkey on your hat. But this is just a logo. So
if anybody wants to draw that logo, I will get that put on a hat.
Exactly. That will be the new show logo. All right. UFC 296, Edwards versus Covington. Well-deserved title shot for Colby Covington once again. December 16th, T-Mobile Arena, Paradise, Nevada. We've got 14 fights. 9 of them are going to be on today's show. So as I've wasted almost 10 minutes, we probably should get into this. We're going to start with the early prelims, ESPN+/UFC Fight Pass, 6 p.m. Eastern. And it just shows you how strong the card is. We got Randy Brown in the opener. Welterweights. Randy Brown versus Muslim Salikov. We have the king of Kung Fu in the opener. That would be Salikov. He is 19-4, 13 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice. 6-3 in the UFC. Loss of his last 3. One we had in there was the one where we had him written off as dead, and then he came and won and screwed us over. So I remember that. Used fight up at middleweight, 2011 pro MMA debut. Was a Sonda Olympic gold medalist. It was not an official Olympic sport, but he had a gold medal in it. Striking stats better than Brown's. And Salikov has outstruck his UFC opponents by 0.46 strikes per minute. He's at +220. Rude boy, Randy Brown. Not Rudy. Randy Brown is Gumby wanted to call him on his other podcast. I was listening today. You called him Rudy. Like, we actually messed up for once.
I did. In my co-host was a good pronunciation.
He was. Your co-host did great. Randy Brown. Not Rudy. 17-5. 6-5 submissions. He's been knocked out twice, submitted twice. 11-5 in the UFC. 5-1 over his last 6. He did win his last fight. Was a regional champion. The next stats are going to tell you maybe the key to this fight. 4 inches taller, 8 inches of reach, 6 years younger. All three of those, I think, are keys here. He's more active landing strikes. That ties right into the stats I just told you too. He's outstruck his UFC opponents by 1.05 strikes per minute. He's at -250. Go ahead, Mr. Gumby.
Yeah, I'm going to take Randy Brown. You mentioned the length. And I think the youth is important here too, but I think the length is probably more important because the thing about Salikov is he's really going to need to force his way onto the inside in this fight, in order to have any chance. And really like, that's not where he does his best work, right? Like he does his best work from range and when he can be the one staying away from other people, right? We've seen those spinning back kicks do a lot of damage. And, you know, like we've seen his, not just his kicks, but his like, you know, his punches from distance too have been really good. I just think he's going to have a tough time getting close to Randy Brown. In addition to that, like I also think we've seen like sneaky wrestling out of Randy Brown once in a while that like you don't necessarily think of because of the frame that he has. Even if Salikov does kind of like bum rush him and just get like nice and in and close on him and try to mess him up, I think Brown has got some other avenues there to really give him a lot of trouble. So, there's just too many reasons to like Randy Brown here. And you know, to your point, I know you love a youth and a length. Those are your
especially rude ones.
Yeah, I love the length of youth. So, in addition to that being a thing that like you kind of like the youth might mean something here because we've seen Muslim Salikov kind of just like run out of gas in a few fights. Yeah. So like especially if he's running after Randy Brown and like trying to blitz into range with Randy Brown, like that just is kind of a recipe for him to tire out even more than he already is. So yeah, give me Randy Brown on this one.
Now we did write Salikov off in the past and he came back to surprises, but I don't think this is a good matchup for him. Randy Brown's not just a super lengthy good striker, he's very good basically all around, very good grappler as well. But yeah, strikingly, Ruba Randy Brown, unfortunately, the odds are not going in our favor here. They got bigger since I broke it down yesterday or 2 days ago. Anyhow, -250 is what we are locking in on right now. Hopefully, you got in on Randy Brown early if you agree with this here. All right, let's go to a couple of big boys, shall we? Heavyweights, Martin Moutet versus Shamil Gaziev. Two heavyweights that don't have Wikipedia pages, that's always means it's going to be a fantastic battle, Dan.
I mean,
two unknown heavyweights, fantastic. No, this one's they're up and comers. It's fine.
You could do a lot worse than these two.
You could definitely. Gaziev 11-0. There you go, right there. You can do a lot worse than that. He's seven knockouts, three submissions. He owes his rounds. This is his UFC debut. He owes his UFC rounds. 1-0 on the Contender Series. He's won three straight fights via finish. Used to fight at light heavyweight, an inch of reach on Boudet. He outstruck his contender opponent by 1.52 strikes per minute, and he did not get hit in that fight. He's at +126. Boudet, Baddies is the nickname, 13-1, six knockouts, three submissions, never been finished in a fight, 4-0 in the UFC, 1-0 in Contender Series, 12-0 over his last 12, obviously. He's not lost since October 2017. Won his last fight via submission, was a regional champion, 6 pounds heavier than Gaziev based on their last weigh-ins, so, which is basically nothing at heavyweight, I guess. A year younger. He's almost 4 times more active landing strikes, but Gaziev is based off of one fight. And Boudet's better grappling stats based off of that one fight also. And Boudet has outstruck his UFC and Contender Series opponents by 0.22 strikes per minute, -135. All right, my turn. I'll go dog. I will take a shot at a undefeated heavyweight underdog. Why the heck not? Gaziev has looked pretty good. And just look at Boudet's... Just look at his record of corpses that he's been going through over this past few fights that he's strung up this win streak for. I'm actually going to call it up and I'm going to read you some of these stellar names that we like to talk about on this show. He's beaten Josh Parisian, Jake Collier, Lucas Brezhki. That's the last three wins.
He didn't beat Brezhki either. Like I know he won. But go on MMA decisions and look at the Lucas Brezhki fight. Media member scored that fight for Boudet, and he works for Sherdog. So, you know,
there you go, Sherdog. plus, Gaziev, despite not fighting in the UFC, I like his resume better. Even though he was a huge favorite over Greg Velasco, he did beat an undefeated guy there. He beat Darko Stosic before that. He's got some decent names. He's got undefeated fighters that he's beaten before he got in the UFC. So give me the underdog here.
Yeah, I was going to go Gaziev too. I was prepared with that list of names already because I thought you were going to take Martin Boudet
Not when I look at his resume again, I'm like, oh yeah, he's fought the bottom. All we need is a Jake Collier on there.
But I know that you're a guy who likes, you're a guy who likes stats. So like his stats look a little better than Gaziev's because Gaziev in that fight dropped Velasco real quickly. He wound up in kind of a weird grappling situation, but like his smart defensive grappling just kind of like saved him from being submitted. And then when he was in a good grappling situation, he just took it to him. The thing that I like about Gaziev, if you watch him over time versus Boudet, is a lot of his strikes are straighter. And I think that's what, I mean, if you watch that fight with Velasco, that's what dropped Velasco, right? Is he threw a very straight punch, landed right on the button, knocked down Velasco, probably could have finished it up with punches if he didn't go to the grappling so much. But like Boudet is a little bit loopier. He's a little bit more tentative. I think his gas tank is better. I think Boudet has got a little bit better of a gas tank, but I don't know that it's going to matter here in a heavyweight fight. If it does, we're in for a pretty lame ass fight. So I like Gadzhiev too here. I would like to see him try to wrestle a little bit early on to mix it up with Boudet, but I really do think the straight punches are going to be a big piece of this fight. So, and what did you say the number on this was? It seems like it got wider.
Plus 126, we're getting Gadzhiev. I think I may have had him in better odd a day or two.
Yeah, that's actually a little shorter than I remember it being. Yeah. So, exactly. Not going in the right direction, but still a heavyweight dog. So, you know,
yep.
It's gotta love him.
To go with what you're saying, it's amazing. Sport's been around for what, almost 30 years, and still a straight jab. So many fighters just don't have one. They don't like
not a heavyweight.
Yeah, especially heavyweight. It's the quickest path to the person's face, and yet it's like foreign to a lot of these fighters. But anyhow, one thing that's not foreign to you, if you've listened to the show before, is our love of underdog fantasy. Gumby and I write articles on the Sports Gambling Podcast website every day for Underdog Fantasy for our NBA plays. But it's not just NBA. They cover every sport. Underdog has a way for you to play alongside your favorite fantasy players all season long, regardless of sport. Like I said, NFL, NBA, NHL, college basketball, college football, and MMA. They should add that to the iCopy. I'm adding it on my own. Simply pick higher or lower on your favorite player's fantasy stats and cash in. Gummy's taking the higher on Gaziev's jabs.
Now you're speaking for me. I had one all queued up. You're speaking.
That'll be a good one though.
I don't think they measure the amount of jabs.
No, they don't. Gummy's a robot, and I've short circuited his.
Yeah, you short circuited him. I had a good one though. I had Derek White's points against the Cavs on Thursday.
Oh yeah. He's doing really good this year.
Yeah, he's putting up great numbers, and they still got his projection at only 15.5. So yeah, higher than 15.5 against the Cavs for sure.
Yes, for sure. So grab that, watch along, and make your picks, and maybe make a little cash over on Underdog's mobile app or website, underdogfantasy.com. And when you sign up with the promo code SGPN, Underdog will double your first deposit of up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy, promo code SGPN. All right, let's continue to a featherweight bout. Dropping way down in weight, Andre Fili versus Lucas Almeida. Almeida, 14-2, 9 knockouts, 5 submissions. The man owes his rounds. He's been submitted once, so he's gone the distance once. He really owes his rounds. 1-1 in the UFC, 2-1 over his last 3. Lost his last fight via submission, 0-1 on the Contender Series. However, he has multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
Gret, get the shirt, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store, or get the shirt I'm wearing right now, MMA Gambling hoodie, or get a Gumby's got an SGPN shirt on, or get the SGP hat I have on. We got everything you need. All right. What was I talking about? Almeida. Yes. Used to fight at lightweight, more active landing strikes than Fili. He's one of these. He's had what, 2 UFC fights, and yet he's been hit exactly the same amount of times as he's hit his opponent. So strike differential is 0.0. Animal House. He's at plus 145. Fili, touchy Fili, 22-10 with 1 no contest, 9 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out 3 times, submitted twice. 10-9 with 1 no contest in the UFC. 1-2 over his last 3. 1-3-1 with the 1 being a no contest over his last 5. So 1 win in his last 5 fights is what I'm trying to say. He did lose his last fight. He's missed weight before. 2009 pro MMA debut. 3 inches of reach on Almeida. Fili's been outstruck in the UFC by 0.3 strikes per minute. Better grappling stats than Almeida. Minus 170.
I'm going to go with Andre Fili. You know, I know he's not on the best run, but I really do think the level of opponents he's fought is kind of underrated. You know, like we kind of saw the Joe Anderson Brito loss as like a really bad loss at the time. And now look, Joe Anderson Brito is out there, you know, taking care of Jonathan Pierce. So like that loss wound up aging extremely well. And in addition to that too, I think the thing I like most about Fili in this fight is I really don't think he should have a hard time wrestling Lucas Almeida. Lucas Almeida's takedown defense, not particularly good. You know, sure, there's maybe not much we can draw from a fight with Pat Sabatini, right? Like, he should just get taken down by Pat Sabatini anytime. But, like, go back to his Contender Series fight. He got taken down a bunch of times by Daniel Zellhuber, who is, like, not a wrestler. Like, has no wrestling background. That's a Mexican striker right there. Not the type of guy who should be taking you down multiple times. And then if you look at a couple of his fights from Jungle Fight, too, he's got some nice submission wins in Jungle Fight, but a lot of times it's from being taken down and kind of conceding those takedowns. Like, he's got a couple triangles off of his back. He's got a guillotine when somebody shot in. I think Andre Fili's good enough at submission defense that he shouldn't have to worry about that with Lucas Almeida. And I also think that, like, the takedowns will be there on Lucas Almeida. So, yeah, give me Andre Fili in this one.
I will be taking Almeida here. Just a way better striker and way more powerful on the feet. Obviously, he's got to keep it on the feet. That's the key. So that is a concern, I know, but I think he's worth it at the dog money. And I want to say Feely's an older fighter. He's only like a few months older than Almeida, but he's an older. They're both older fighters, but he's an older fighter who's hit the skids, which is never a good thing. Not
he's old in the way he's old in the way Kelvin Gastelum is old.
Yes. Anyhow, I'm not willing to take Feely at -170. So give me Almeida here, and we shall see. There we go. We differed on at least one fight, so different than last week. All right, flyweights now. Djir Ulumbekov versus Cody Durden. Let me tell you about Durden first. 16-4-1, 6 knockouts, 5 submissions. Pretty well-rounded finisher there. He's been submitted 3 times himself. 5-2-1 in the UFC. He's won 4 straight and 5 of 6. We didn't really see this coming, but he's putting together quite the run here. Used to fight at bantamweight, was regional champion. He's got a positive strike differential of 0.19 strikes per minute. Better grappling stats than Ulumbekov, +150. Ulumbekov, 14-2, 1 knockout, 7 submissions, never been finished in a fight. 3-1 in the UFC, 6-1 over his last 7, including winning his last fight via submission. Whoever he's not fought in over a year, it was November 2022 when he fought last. He, as well, has multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
Correct. Get the shirt, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. Russians have mantles, for sure. They all have to have fireplaces, right? It's cold there. All right. I would imagine that as well. Used to fight at bantamweight, 2013 pro MMA debut, 3 inches of reach over Durden, more active landing strikes. He's outstruck his UFC opponents barely. He's at +0.06 strikes per minute. Strike differential in the positive, -170. Is it me? It's me. Give me Durden. This is my underdog run I told you all about. Durden is, like I said, an improbable run, but an impressive run nonetheless. I think he can make this gritty, like he does all his fights, grind out a win over Ulumbekov and then tell him to go back to Russia. Right, Dan?
I think the combination of that terrible post-fight interview and
yep,
his, like, let's call it a spade a spade, a really ugly loss to Jimmy Flick. And I think we took those two things and just kind of, like, you know, balled him up as like, oh, this is a guy who's going back to fighting on the regional circuit in a couple of minutes. And like, we definitely underrated his wrestling. Like, his wrestling is really good for this division. Like, I don't know that there's another guy as good at wrestling, just like pure, like, collegiate looking wrestling at flyweight than him outside of, like, you know, the top 8 or 9 guys. You know what I mean? Like, outside of, you know, names that you would hear like Pantoja and Roy Vall and stuff like that. Like, outside of guys who have names like that, Cody Durden is going to be one of the guys who's just spoiling everybody's day on the edge of the top 15 with, like, brutal wrestling. And I think we saw Ulumbekov kind of wilt under the pressure of Tim Elliott, right? Tim Elliott put him up against the cage. Sure. Did he grab his gloves 35 times? Yes, he did. But, like, good for him. And at the same token, like, I just think that kind of game plan of just, like, being in his face, forcing him to fight a gritty fight, if it worked for Tim Elliott, I don't see why it wouldn't work for Cody Durden. And so, like, Cody Durden with, like, maybe even a touch better wrestling than Tim Elliott has sometimes, at least in terms of, like, the wrestling side, not the jiu-jitsu side, but the wrestling side. Yeah, I'll take Cody Durden to win 2 out of 3 rounds here.
Yep. Very good points, all of those. All right, let's sneak in the main event of the early prelims before I tell you about our final sponsor. Light heavyweight fight, Alonzo Manafield versus Dustin Jacoby. This is a banger of a fight to be on the early prelims. This would have been what, on Facebook in the olden days, right?
Oh, man, the Facebook early prelim.
Nowadays, it would have been on OnlyFans if it was on some in some other promotion. But no, we get to see it on Fight Pass or you. What's that other thing they got?
ESPN Plus.
That's what Yankees have down there in the United States of America. All right, Manafield, he's atomic. He's 14-3-1, 10 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out once. This man owes his rounds, Gumby. There's a lot of people owning his rounds this week. 7-3-1 in the UFC, 3-0-1 over his last 4. Won his last fight via submission. He's not lost since December 2021. 2-0 in contender series. Surprised that a guy like him would take a couple shots before Dana White would sign him up, but nonetheless, he did. He fought one of those fights at heavyweight. Am I correct in that, I think, on the contender series?
I don't remember that, but let me.
He's fought it heavily before.
Let me put the intern.
It doesn't matter that much, does it? He's got a positive strike differential of 0.73. Better grappling stats than Jacoby, +220. Jacoby, the hand yak, is the nickname. We've gone over the nickname numerous times in the past. We're not going to go over it again, right?
Sure. Yeah, we don't.
He's 19-7-1, 12 knockouts, one submission. He's been knocked out once, submitted twice. 7-4-1 in the UFC over two stints. 1-2 over his last three. 5-2 over his last seven. Got a TKO win in his last fight. He's fought at heavyweight and down at middleweight. 0-2 in Bellator. 0-1 in World Series of Fighting. Was regional champion 2010 pro MMA debut. 10-8 as a pro kickboxer. As I kickbox my mic. 1-0 as a pro boxer. 3 inches taller than Menafield. More active landing strikes than him. He's got a positive strike differential of 1.44 strikes per minute. And he's one of the nicest men in the world. If you hear him interviewed by Gumby this week or any week Gumby's interviewed him, he's a very friendly, polite young man. He's at -258. And yes, I am letting you know, Gumby did interview him this week. So take that for what it's worth. Has his insides exploded? Has his intestines come out of his mouth yet or anything like that? Or is he good still?
I think he's still good. I'll also just fill you in. Alonzo Menafield did fight twice on Contender Series. That was in 2017 and 18. So that was back when Dana wasn't signing everybody. Yeah. Both of them at light heavyweight. The 2017 one, the first one he won via doctor stoppage due to hurting his opponent's eye. So, like, back then, Dana White didn't get jacked up that he won, period, or that he was so vicious he hurt his eye and the guy couldn't get off the stool. You know, like, now that's Dana's new narrative. Whereas back then, he used to, like, if you didn't violently knock somebody out, you were out. I'm going Jacoby here. I like his length. I think his length and his cardio and the way that he fights long should be trouble here for Alonzo Menafield in every corner. Alonzo Menafield, it's not like he's a short guy, but like he doesn't use length like Dustin Jacoby does. Dustin Jacoby's got the glory kickboxing background. I mean, the guy kickboxed Alex Pajeda, which I feel like people forget about, that this guy has been kind of around the block. And I think I think Menafield is more like his nickname kind of says, he's atomic. He needs that big bomb to go off. And outside of that, like, he's not the type of guy who seems like he's going to just outclass you for 15 minutes. Whereas I think Dustin Jacoby can be either of them. And with the way that he uses his length, I think he frustrates Alonzo Menafield for a lot of this fight.
Despite me shaking my head in agreeing, I am taking Alonzo Menafield. This is one of my four underdogs in a row. I thought it was three, but no, it is four. But when you dive right into the striking stats, they're very, very similar. Yet Menafield has more power. Jacoby looks better striking for sure. He has better technique.
So I'm gonna ask a follow-up question because I think you might be right to an extent. I think Menafield shows more power, but do you think he has more? Because for me, and this is why I like Jacoby in this fight too, and why I pose this question, I think Dustin Jacoby has that in there. I think in the Daun Jung fight, we saw him when he decided to just throw a bomb, what it looks like when that dude just throws a bomb. He can put you out. He's just so safe on the feet that he doesn't want to get knocked out in return, that he just throws softer. He's smarter in the way he fights. He fights like a guy who doesn't fight at light heavyweight. So, like, my question, and it's maybe more rhetorical than it's actually asking it of you, is he actually more powerful, or is he just dumber with his power?
You're just there's no question there, Gumby. You're just trying to make me look bad and drill home your pick again. But no, I like Menafield. He has shown his power more than Jacoby, I would say. And I've seen Jacoby on skates recently in fights. So, and at +220, why the heck not, Gumby? Maybe I'll catch up to you.
I don't know that you're going to do that, but that's all right. You keep thinking that.
All right. Before we move on to the main card, not the main card, the main prelim portion of the card, let me tell you about Hall of Fame bets. That's something we do agree on. Win bigger by betting smarter this NFL season with Hall of Fame bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NFL, NBA, and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Enter any parlay idea into Hall of Fame bets' revolutionary parlay optimizer tool to get hit rates broken down by leg, as well as an expected probability for the entire parlay. Sort all players by hit rate for any bet to learn which players are hot and which picks have value. Stop betting in the dark and join over 30,000 users researching with Hall of Fame bets to craft more intelligent, data-driven parlays. Download the Hall of Fame bets app or visit hofbets.com and use code SGPN to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching and start winning with Hall of Fame bets.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All that arguing about Manifield Jacoby is for naught, because we know something's going to happen. Jacoby's got to pull out of the fight before it even happens. Right, Gummy? You've infected him with something.
He's got appendicitis. You know, it's funny that tangentially mentioned something about the Cowboys on Top Turtle, and their coach had appendicitis.
There you go.
I was like, ooh, damn.
See, Gummy's starting to believe it.
That's when it gets right, dangerous, when you start believing it.
It is. All right, the regular main prelims, ESPN Plus and ESPN 2, 8 p.m., starting with a women's flyweight fight, a very good one at that. Casey O'Neill versus Ariane Lipsky, or Ariane Lipsky, the queen of violence, you can call her. 16-8. Lipsky is 6 knockouts, 3 submissions. She's been knocked out 4 times, 5-5 in the UFC. She's won 2 straight, 3 of 4. And 3 of 6, so she was on a little bit of a skid before this. Used fight at bantamweight and down at strawweight. Was a KSW champion before all of this UFC nonsense. 2013 pro MMA debut. Has been outstruck in the UFC by 0.26 strikes per minute, plus 162. King Casey O'Neill, 9-1, 3 knockouts, 2 submissions. Never been finished any fight. 4-1 in the UFC. Did lose her last fight. Was a regional champion. Used fight down at strawweight. Has missed weight before. 2 inches of reach, 3 years younger than Lipsky. Better striking stats and more active, twice more active landing strikes than Lipsky is. Has a positive strike differential of 2.87 strikes per minute in the UFC, minus 180. Give me King, Casey O'Neill. Still a little concerned just because she's not won since coming back from injury. I still want to see her back at tip-top form, but I think she can, even though Lipsky's on a good run, I think she can be here. With the volume, as the stats and everything I've laid out for you here, she can really put a pace on Lipsky here, I think. So give me the King.
I'm going dog. I'm going to go Lipsky.
All right.
I think here's the thing. Is I think the things Casey O'Neill does, you're right, is volume. But like let's face it, that's not the best thing she does. The best thing she does is she mixes it up on the ground, right? Like when we saw her take people's backs in her early part of her UFC career, that's when everybody got excited on her as a prospect. We're like, look what she could do. And even if you want to go back to her last win, which, by the way, her last win was 22 months ago when she won a split decision over not yet retired Roxanne Modafari. Even in that fight, she couldn't really get her grappling going. I've not seen her grapple against somebody who is even close to sniffing the top 15. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like she struggles to grapple anybody in this division who can hang. And the thing about Lipsky is we sort of wrote her off after she took a couple of bad losses. We're like, oh, she'll never be what we saw of her in KSW. Because let's say she was nasty in KSW. She was really good. And we're like, oh, we just won't ever see that version of her. And since then, she has turned it around and like really become that person. She's become the queen of violence. Nasty knees in the clinch. Good elbows. Like that Muay Thai style that devastates grapplers. Like, it's dangerous for grapplers. And I think we saw in the last fight, Casey O'Neill is not hanging with anybody on the feet who is faster or sharper than her. And then, at the end of the day, that means your prayer here for Casey O'Neill is that she scores enough takedowns to win this. And Lipsky's been defending him lately. Like, if you look at her fight metric, I don't think she's conceded a takedown in, like, 4 fights. And sure, maybe not against the like highest level grapplers in the whole world, but she's like doing a better job at stuffing takedowns so that she can use those devastating elbows and knees. So I think she's a bad matchup for Casey O'Neill, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, all good points. I agree with it all. Yet I'm still going to take O'Neill. This was a tough one. This is one of the ones I could have gone either way on for sure. So we shall see how it plays out come Saturday. Should be a fun fight regardless. All right, going to men's side bantamweights. Cody Garbrandt versus Brian Kelleher. We talked about this one a little bit in the previous show, but let's break it down for real now. Boom, Brian Kelleher, 24-14, 8 knockouts, 10 submissions. But knocked out once, submitted 8 times, 8-7 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight fights, both via submission. He's not fought since June of 2022, so going on a year and a half. 2-2 over his last 4. Used to fight at featherweight, multi-region championships on his
mantle.
Correct. Get shirt, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. 0-2 in Bellator, 2011 pro MMA debut. He's been outstruck in the UFC by 1.25 strikes per minute. He's got an inch of reach on Garbrandt, more active landing strikes, better grappling stats as well. Despite all of that, the bookies aren't impressed. They have him at +172. No love, Cody Garbrandt, 13-5, 10 knockouts. He's been knocked out 4 times, 8-5 in the UFC. Used to be the champion of the world. He's won 1 of his last 3 and 2 of his last 7. Won his last fight. Used to fight at flyweight and featherweight, 2012 pro MMA debut. 2 inches height, 5 years younger than Kelleher. He's been outstruck in the UFC by 0.89 strikes per minute, -198. All right, this is a mess of a fight, Gumby. Break it down.
So I don't know that. Oh, hang on. I got to change the little banner right there. There we go. All right, now it says Cody Garbrandt versus Brian Kelleher. There we go. I don't think this is an easy fight to break down.
No.
The inactivity for both, the fact that Cody Garbrandt oscillates between being a wild shell of himself and being that guy who beat the shit out of Dominic Cruz. You know, he goes back and forth between those. Brian Kelleher's layoff being a giant neck injury. You know, Cody Garbrandt now looks like a feather will knock him out, and Brian Kelleher hasn't knocked anybody out in almost 4 years. You know, like, how do you break this fight down? But what I did was I went back and I watched fights Brian Kelleher has won. And the thing that just stuck out to me time and time again when watching those fights is like, who are these people? Like, some of the names that came up, I was like, man, I forgot that dude was even like in the UFC. Like, do you remember who Domingo Pilarte is? Could you tell me anything about Domingo Pilarte?
He fought in the UFC. I remember the name.
That's yeah. All I did. Or how about Ray Rodriguez? You know, like,
I know that name less than Domingo Pilarte. I do know it, but I can't tell you anything about the person.
That's 2 out of his last 3 wins, and the other one is Kevin Kroom. So, you know, like, not the best run of opponents for Kelleher that he's beaten. And like, anytime he hasn't beaten one of those guys, you know, like any of the guys he's losing to, sure, they're top notch guys like, you know, Mario Bautista and people like that. But also when he faces somebody with big power, he looks completely disinterested in throwing combinations. Like, he doesn't want to be in there throwing and tangling. Like, against Kevin Kroom, get me in the pocket. Let me throw 7 punch combinations and let me get the best of it, and then I'll get out. Against Mario Bautista, anytime Bautista, he threw a couple of flying knees, he threw head kicks. Anytime he threw anything, Kelleher was out of there. And as a result, Kelleher really couldn't get his offense going. And all of those things kind of ring true about a Cody Garbrandt fight. Cody Garbrandt's going to throw big. We know Cody Garbrandt's going to throw big. I don't want to pick Cody Garbrandt. I would never bet money on Cody Garbrandt as a favorite. But like, if gun to my head, I have to pick a winner here. I don't think you can feel good about taking Kelleher on that kind of layoff with now, you know, really the same power he's had before against the guy who I think is going to scare him in there.
Yeah, I don't feel good about taking Cody Garbrandt either, but I'm going to have to do it. Gumby laid out why Garbrandt is the picker. Yeah, if Kelleher didn't have such a long layoff and actually had a bit more power, or at least exhibited a bit more power recently, then I might have considered it, but I can't at this point. So Garbrandt is going to have to be our pick here. All right. The co-main event of the early prelims, women's bantamweight Irene Aldana versus Carol Hossa. And so that the, like I said, the bantamweight, the base of the heavyweight of the women's division is what it is. So, take that for what it's worth. All right. I'll tell you about Hossa first, 17-5, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions, She's been submitted twice. 6-2 in the UFC. Loss, win, loss, win over her last four. Used to fight at featherweight. 2012 pro MMA debut. 6 years younger than Aldana. Better striking stats. More active landing strikes as well. And has a positive strike differential of 1.26 strikes per minute. Plus 165 on her. Aldana, 14-7, 8 knockouts, 3 submissions. She's been knocked out twice. 7-5 in the UFC, 2-2 over her last 4. She did lose her last fight. Has missed weight a couple times in the past. 4-1 in Evicta, 2012 pro MMA debut, just like Hossa. 4 inches taller, 1 inch reach. Has been outstruck in the UFC by 0.85 strikes per minute. Better grappling stats than Hossa, minus 185. This is another one, like, what to do with this fight. I'm going to take Aldana. I'm trying to remember why I settled on Aldana. I think I liked her resume better because it's women's bantamweight. I know these women are near the top of the division as well. Hossa actually has better stats, but I just have a better feeling on Aldana at this point. Hossa barely snuck by Yana Santos, who coming back from pregnancy in her last fight, lost to Norma Dumont. You know, you can't feel really good.
That's what I was just going to say. You want me to bail you out on a reason?
You can't feel really good about that stuff. At least Irene,
she lost to Norma Dumont and is fighting somebody who just fought for the title. There you go. There's your reason. Yeah. Okay. You don't need more.
I knew there was a reason. Sometimes I forget why I landed on someone, but yes, I knew the reason why I liked Aldana more, but yes.
I almost jumped in when you were like, I'm trying to remember the reason. It might've been resume. And I was like, she lost to Norma Dumont, dude. Like, she lost to Norma Dumont and looked awful in that fight. Norma Dumont was the better striker in that fight that day. And like, yeah, Irene Aldana got absolutely blasted in her last fight. You mentioned she's 2-2 in her last four, and she's got 3 losses in her last 5 or 6 fights. But those losses are, you know, Holly Holm, Amanda Nunes. Yep. I want to say she also lost, I'm trying to remember the other good one she lost to just before Holly Holm. But she's like, she's lost to the cream of the crop. She's lost to the best fighters in the division, and largely like by those fighters like grappling her a little bit. Like, even Holly Holm like pushed her up against the cage and tried to make it not a striking match because Irene's good there. And I don't know that Hossa can get the grappling going here. I think Irene is just going to piece her up on the feet. So yeah, I'll take Irene Aldana too.
All right, there you go. All right, let's go to our main event of the prelims. It would be a featherweight fight, Josh Emmett versus Bryce Mitchell. I'll tell you about Emmett first. Wasn't this, he had some weird nickname, right?
Oh, he was trying something out, I think.
Yes. It's not listed anymore. It is, his nickname is now CCO. Do you know about that?
Well, no, I know, Tony Ferguson, who we'll talk about tomorrow, is CSO.
Okay. Well, he's CCO. So I don't know why. Maybe you can find out for us someday. He's supposed to be the nickname guy on the show.
Is it CCO or COO?
It's CCO.
That doesn't help. I was going to say like carbon dioxide would be.
Yeah. COO. I was going to say, is it some science thing? I didn't do so hot at science in school. Anyhow, Emmett is 18-4. I know that for sure. 6 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out once, submitted once. This man owes us some stoppages. 9-4 in the UFC. He's lost 2 straight. Before that, he won 5 straight. He's missed weight before. He's got multiple regional championships on his
mantle.
Correct. Get the shirt. sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store. Used to fight at lightweight, 2011 pro MMA debut, more active landing strikes than Mitchell. However, he's been outstruck in the UFC by minus 0.59 strikes a minute. He's at plus 185. Thug Nasty Bryce Mitchell, 16-1, 9 submissions. He's been submitted once. He's taking this fight on short notice, a couple weeks notice. I believe, if I remember correctly, he's 7-1 in the UFC. He did win his last fight after losing to, Ilir Latifi. He probably would lose to Ilir. Well, maybe not. He might have been able to get him down. Ilya Topuria. That's who he lost to. He has won a fight since then. 1-1 in the Ultimate Fighter, was regional champion. He's fight down at bantamweight, 4 inches taller than Emmett, 9 years younger. Better grappling stats, not surprising. Mitchell has outstruck his UFC opponents by 0.7 strikes a minute, minus 218, despite the short notice.
I'm going Bryce Mitchell. I was incorrect in assessing that his grappling game was not as good as I thought it was after watching him lose to Topuria. I think that's just good, how good Topuria is. I had picked Danny Gay to get an upset on Bryce Mitchell because of that. I was like, Gay can keep it standing. I think for a second when this fight was announced, I said the same thing about Josh Emmett. It's like, oh, Josh Emmett, he comes from a wrestling background. He could keep this standing. Josh Emmett has really good offensive wrestling. I think when Josh Emmett chooses to wrestle, he does pretty well for himself. I don't love the way he defends wrestling. I think that that's the problem here, is that if this fight makes it to the ground even for a second, Mitchell ain't going to let him back up. Bryce Mitchell is so good on the ground, which really speaks to how good Topuria is as well. But he's just like so sharp on the ground. He's clearly rounding out his game. His wrestling game is getting better and better every single time. Josh Emmett seems like he almost has a foot out the door after like not getting that title shot he really wanted. And this is, you know, short notice or not, I still like Bryce Mitchell here.
Yeah, I do too. I'm going against the stats. It's not that short notice guys never win. They just don't win that often. I think this is a fight that Mitchell can win. Emmett's going to have a hard time keeping it on the feet, I believe. And he's got a lot of miles on him. He's an old dog at a lightweight class, which is never a good combination. So give me Thug Nasty to make it 2 straight wins for him. All right, that's it. That's all 9 fights on the prelims. I'll give you a recap. We got Mitchell. We got Aldana. We got Garbrandt. I like O'Neill. Gumby likes Lipsky. I like Menifield. Gumby likes Jacoby. Got to put your name down there. We both like Durden. Gumby likes Feely. I like Almeida. We both like Gaziev. We both like Rude Boy Randy Brown, right?
Yeah. Plus, well, right, three differences on the 9-fight card. That's pretty good.
All right. We're going to be back in your ear holes and your eye holes if you're watching us on YouTube tomorrow with the main card and all our fancy plays. You can catch us in the Discord, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Discord. Catch us on Twitter, SGP and MMA, at Gumby Vreeland, at Jeff Fox Writer. I'm also Jeff Fox Writer on Instagram. You can catch me on my Substack, moneymma.substack.com. Get in there. You can get a free subscription and you can still enter my last pick'em contest of the year. So get in there and make your picks for UFC 296. Listen to Gumby's Top Turtle MMA podcast. I listened to it today. He's got very friendly, actually both of them were very friendly. The Hanyak, Dustin Jacoby, and a guy whose name I can't remember how to say, but Gumby likes to show off by saying it. So he's going to tell you his name right now.
Oseuman Oyemolan, who, by the way, there we talked about on the LFA episode. I said, if you can get him at dog money, he posted it plus 210. It's all the way down to plus 170 right now. So if you're hearing this, and there's still time to get in on Oseuman Oyemolan, I would suggest doing so.
There you go. So listen to that. It's always a good listen, regardless of who is on it. And obviously all good things in the sports gambling spheres at sportsgamblingpodcast.com and our Patreon, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/Patreon. As I said, we'll be back tomorrow. It'll be Rude Boy Jeff Fox and the King of Kung Fu Gumby Vreeland. We'll be riding shotgun, and we will talk to you then. Bye-bye.